Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. My name is Matt Bungard, and Nick Canton is not here. So with me today, Martin Journalism Gabor. Welcome.
Someone call Wanda Cronker. The journalist is in the building.
Hell how yeah. I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
Never better. The sun is shining. Don't know about your neck of the woods, mate.
But yeah, it is. It's great today. It's been miserable all weekend. Yeah.
So bad.
Mate, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule on a Monday morning to be here. I know we've only got about an hour before you've got to pitch up at the Annesley press conference 2 hours before it starts to get the best seat. So we'll try to rush through this as quickly as possible. What else have we going on? How have you been finding the footy this year in general before we get into the games? People want to hear from you. We haven't heard from you in 2024.
Well, just a quick one. I'm actually, just like an NRL referee, I've been rotated out this week. I'm on holidays for a week.
Oh, fantastic.
But you know what? Rested. I might just bring my popcorn and go to Annesley. He was devastated I wasn't there last week. I was stuck in Manly. But this one is going to be the spiciest one of the year. I think we're going to talk a lot more about it later in the show. I cannot wait. Mate, the footy's been great. I thought
it really has.
You know, sometimes seasons can get off to really slow starts. I thought we kicked it into gear from round zero, not even round one, round zero. The storylines have been amazing. Like, we've had some days where we go to – I've crashed at like 8 o'clock. It's like, what the hell? You know, the 30 Rock meme, what a week it's been. Gabs, it's only Wednesday. Like, it's just been nonstop sometimes. And that's great. We don't want boring. We want drama. And not just drama, good drama, like the footy.
On-field footy drama, not manufactured, where's this player going to go drama. So it's been really good
exactly
in that
right.
Completely agree. And let's start off on Friday evening with an absolute banger. Manly 24, Canberra 26. Tough beat for me and the Jinxes Aren't Real crowd as Nick Canton intentionally Coltrane Manly to try and drive his beloved Canberra Raiders to victory. And drive them to victory, he did. Now, Campo is not here, but before you and I dive into this game, I know we have a lot of Canberra fans who listen to this show, so I did reach out externally to get a voice message from one of their most diehard fans. So with that being said, take it away, Raider Dave.
Donald Trump is president of the United States. Work by Rihanna is topping the charts. The Cubs have just won the World Series, and Elliot Whitehead is doing sick shit on the footy field. It's 2016 all over again, baby. So the Raiders were really bad against the Broncos and huge against the Sharks, and went on to make some changes to the team this week that I honestly thought was only going to make them worse. So I went into this game with zero expectations, and 25 minutes of the game, those expectations had somehow dropped even further. Everything that was so listless about the Raiders' attack against the Sharks appeared to have not changed a bit, and if there's one thing you shouldn't do when you're incapable of scoring points, it's probably gift tries to the other team, which they managed to do twice in the space of about 5 minutes. But this is where the Seagulls fucked up. They let the Raiders give away too many penalties and six agains, and that led to the ref binning Albert Hopewadi. What happens when you take a Raider off the field? It only makes them stronger. 20 points down, a man off the field, why not just score some of the weirdest tries you'll see and win the damn thing? Why not have your 34-year-old captain, who can't run, take an improbable intercept and then throw an audacious slick pass to score your first points? Why not have the same ligamentless wonder catch a ball that bounces right into his arms and stroll over under the posts? Why not have rugby league's dumbest outside back tiptoe down the sideline like a modern-day Baryshnikov? If you can't win the thing playing clever, you may as well do it playing freaky. Seriously, though, I thought Paramount plus Epoch had a very rough debut for the Raiders last week in the number 7 and was pretty poor in the first half. It bounced back very well. The wherewithal to spot Tommy Turbo up in the line and put the kick in behind for Kotrick was pretty special, and I thought his overall kicking game was quite tidy in keeping the Eagles in their own half for large parts of the game, so well done for that, Apple TV 45 minutes. Ethan Strange, like, what else can you say about this guy? He's just so fucking good. For all the wonderful things about Whiten, over the last couple of years, the one thing he really didn't do was take a game by the scruff of the neck, particularly when it was close. And I really don't see Whiten putting his hand up and taking the ball to the line and making that really deft kicking behind for the match winner to Hudson Young that Strange was able to do last night. So aside from how good Strange is running the ball, just really glad to see that some of the other clever 5-8 type things that you hope that your 5-8 is able to do is coming along as well. Seb Chris, I thought, had a really tidy game at fullback and made some really good kick returns when the Raiders looked completely out of it. And Emre Guler and Danny Levi, meanwhile, can just get in the bin. But just to go on a bit more about Whitehead, I know a lot of people sort of think he's washed and that, you know, he's not the player he used to be and all of that. But I think what people don't realise is that, you know, last night was his 191st game NRL game for the Raiders. But before playing that, he played 177 games in the Super League. So that's just shy of 370 games in those legs. And when you add in the games that he played for England and Great Britain, when he runs out for Magic Round in a couple of weeks, it'll be his 400th professional rugby league game. So yes, the legs are going to be slower, and yes, he's not as agile and all those things. But he just has this knack of showing up in the right place at the right time. And I think that just comes with playing an absolute shitload of footy and knowing to throw yourself into the game. And if you do throw yourself into the game, then you're going to be there when the weird stuff happens. And if your hands are good enough and you're clever enough and you, you know, back yourself, you're going to do cool things. I think that's sort of what Elliot Whitehead has sort of always been a bit about. And I think that's why Raiders fans, I guess, really love him. One last little thing. I was watching the game last night on my own at the pub, and this lady came up to me just after full time and said that for the final 10 minutes of the game, she stopped watching the TV and was watching me instead because it was more entertaining. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about this insane pack of morons that we love watching so much. That's all from me. Thanks, Bungard and Campo, and I'll see you both in a couple of weeks at Magic Round. Catch ya.
I love that. And really, Brady Dave is a perfect sub because he is, along with Nick, the only person who really kicks every ball with these Raiders. Like, it's just so viscerally into it, even when they're watching at the pub. And I love the idea that some woman was just like, who is this insane man that is so invested in this rugby league game? I must watch him.
If you can't see the insane rugby league man at the pub, well, shocks on you. That is you every single time. I've been that guy when my beloved Storm have been playing. What a win, mate. You said Campo Coltrane, Manly, mate. He was on the express train, the express Coltrane, to getting that tip right. And then, like most City Rail trains on a Friday night, it has just hit a roadblock. There is an outage. And what the hell, 20-0. I mean, we thought 50 burger coming up. I don't know about you.
Mate, honestly, yes.
I thought Turbo is going to just break all kinds of records. He was hot for that first 20 minutes. And then I don't know if the rain put him out or what, but they just, that was bad. I still can't really comprehend what happened to Manly. This was not the team of the pod, might I add. This is not the team that we have grown to know and love this season.
No, not at all. And it really turned with that Elliot Whitehead bit of improvised knee footy for the Kyo Weeks try. And I do love, by the way, if you don't, one line break, five tries. If you don't like Canberra Raiders football, then I don't know what to tell you, because that is a vintage Raider ball performance. Just conjuring up bullshit tries out of thin air, left and right. Fantastic stuff. And yeah, I think a lot of it hinged on the Elliot Whitehead in this game was fantastic. I'm glad he got all six Dalian points. There was talk from people, including me earlier in the season, that maybe he needed to take a back seat to their sort of new back row rotation that featured Zach Hosking in that spot, along with Hudson Young. But, you know, he's come back into the team and looked really good, and he was absolutely sensational this game. Kyo Weeks against his former club was so instrumental in turning this comeback around as well. He kicked well, he was sharp, he kind of sort of had a really good read and feel for the game, especially in that second half when they really started to grind their way back on top. And Gabs, like, it must have been so frustrating if you were a Manly fan watching this, because it was like this very slow death that you were just watching this game in slow motion just kind of slip away from you. I think, like, Tommy started this game so brightly, but I think he ended up with about 12 errors, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, but it just felt like they couldn't get out of their own way for the last 50 or so minutes of this game, save for that one Ruben Garrick try. And in the end, you can't really argue with the result. Like, Manly were electric in the first 25 minutes of this game, but after that, they didn't really offer much at all. And to dish that up in front of, you know, a pretty healthy home crowd, the conditions were disgusting. There's only 10,000 people there, but a healthy home crowd given the situation against a team that's coming off a 40-0 loss at home, mind you, who doesn't travel particularly well, to then just be completely just outplayed in the final half an hour of this game in the way that they was, I think is extremely concerning.
Yeah, well, just I thought it was actually quite a false 20-0 lead. Like, I know we said it looked like they were going to put 50.
There was an intercept,
There was an intercept, there was a try for fumbled grubber, Turbo just going through a hole like he always does. And, man, they just stopped, they stopped playing footy in the second half. Balls were hitting the ground, passes just weren't clicking. You don't often say this just because a back row was missing, but geez, I felt like they really missed Haumole Olakau'atu on that right edge. Mm. Like, that's where it seemed to collapse a lot, because that is their go-to edge. And, mate, I think their starting back row was combined for like 91 meters, which Haumole can have in the second half by himself sometimes. And they just seemed a little bit lost. Like, Luke Brooks would look to his left and have to cut back. Chez didn't have that safety blanket that he usually does. And, yeah, you talk about a slow death. I think with 20 to go, I was watching it with my dad, and I said, they're not going to win. They're like, they cannot win. They're not going to score points. Canberra coming. And, mate, you talk about Elliot Whitehead. I like that Ricky, his press conferences, we usually watch when he gets angry, but it's also good when he gives out the praise. And he spoke really well about Elliot Whitehead. Like, I don't know if it was the flick pass or the Falcon intercept or just barging over from close range, but, mate, he was doing it all. And you touched on HBO Max Millennia, like the revenge game, the kicks, the runs. He's had a rough old time, I think, at halfback. Didn't get many opportunities at Manly, but I thought it was really good to see him at Four Pines take his chance and show that, look, of course they're going to struggle without Jamal Fogarty, but at least they do have a guy who can get it done. This was a tough environment to go into, and, mate, him and Ethan got the job done.
Didn't he just? And like for Manly, this is like the third time they've kind of done this. Like the Parramatta game and the Warriors game, both sort of very similar examples where they scored two or three or maybe even four in the Parramatta game, but like very like a glut of early points and then just nothing after that. This is the third time now they've done this in 10 weeks. And why do you think that is?
It's weird because it's strange because Nathan Brown and Matt Lodge, well, mainly Nathan Brown, have actually been providing that punch off the bench. So when Paseka and Aloye do go off, at least they've been able to hold their own. But I don't think those two were as good as they have been in recent weeks. And look, Daly's had a great season, but there have been some times this year where he's been putting kicks in on zero tackle and trying some things that just haven't worked. And I think in these conditions especially, you just can't do that. You've got to park it sometimes and play the territory a bit more. And he didn't do that. I thought he had a pretty poor game. And when Turbo's your main strategy, and, geez, I thought they probably overfed him a little bit, that he didn't use him as a decoy. Because it just, mate, as you said, 12 errors. That was probably by halftime. Like, the Raiders knew by about the 30th minute where the ball was going. He had no space, and, yeah, I thought their attack just looked really, really clunky, which hasn't been the case for a Manly team that has looked like maybe the best team to watch at different stages.
Hang on, NRL.com's got him with one error. That is, I think someone needs to revisit those stats during the week. That is
the
definitely
person who handed out the Dally M votes probably is doing the stats this week. What are we doing?
Oh, I can't wait till we get to dumb Dally M vote of the week. We're going to have to wait a while, but we will get there eventually. But yeah, fantastic win for Canberra. Really just keeps their season going as well. Like, you know, lesser teams would have been forgiven for sort of putting the queue in the rack a little bit after losing their halfback for probably the rest of the season, getting smashed last week. And instead, they win this game in fantastic circumstances, go into a bye next week and then up to Magic Round. So happy days ahead for the Green Machine, and we've got so many of their fans that listen to the show, so I'm very, very happy for them, and for my co-host, of course.
Yeah, it looks great, man. They could quite conceivably, well, with the two bye points, I mean, what they're level with the Doggies, the Broncos, the Roosters, one behind Manly, every chance they're back in the top eight, go to Magic Round. I think they play the Dogs again at Magic Round this year, consolidate the spot, and then suddenly it's not 12 weeks, it's not 10 weeks, it's 8 weeks till Fogarty gets back, and you can start believing again that if we just jag 2-3 more wins, top eight is certainly not out of the question.
Well said, and I'm sure that their fans agree with you. Okay, let's head up to Suncorp. There was 40,000 people there. Chris, that's how many points the Roosters scored as they won 40-18 in a crushing performance. That's 100 points in 2 weeks for the Roosters. They are all the way back, which is upsetting to me for so many reasons. And Brisbane, I don't think you can condemn them too much for this one. They lost a few players to injury, most notably Adam Reynolds, and that and then especially in that sort of period where Mann went off with the HIA, it was really when the Roosters piled on the points. But really good stuff from the Chooks, unfortunately.
Mate, and I know it's a sore point for some, but James Tedesco also 100 super coach points.
Did you dial into the press conference to ask Trent Robertson about that?
You know what? I was tempted on Anzac Day to do it, but I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I
think you made the right call.
They are at Wham Bam. Thank you, man. They are absolutely back, mate. And yes, I mentioned Teddy, but how about this? You score 40 points. Do you know how many try assists the halves had?
I'm going to guess one.
None.
There you go.
None. Crazy. And it was just other people stepping up. Like,
this is an honourable mention for the worst Dally M vote of the week. But Angus Crichton not getting six is crazy.
Oh, unbelievable.
Sorry,
unbelievable.
Go on to what
he started, he's a great, let's just stick with Gus for a bit, because he started the year in reserve grade, right? And there's all this talk like, well, he's gone. He won't be at the Roosters by the end of the year. What are we doing here? Mate, this might just be career best form for Crichton. And he was outstanding on Friday night. It's really good to see, because we all know what he's been through the past 12, 18 months. Mm. And for him to be playing like this is terrific. Shout out to Connor Watson. Like, the Roosters last year said how much they missed him. And it's pretty hard to see for people who aren't Roosters fans or inside that inner sanctum to know just what impact he has on this team. But boy, he started at lock with no Victor Radley, then shifts to dummy half because Brandon Smith comes off. And mate, that speed around the ruck, and that's what people said he brings to the team. And they probably missed that a lot last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
His past month has been electric, and it's good to see him getting the raps that he deserves.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, Crichton's always been a favourite of mine. Of course, came through at South, and another one. Didn't win the premiership like Curie did, but another guy that I've never really begrudged because I've always been such a fan of his work. He seems like a good dude. And of course, you mentioned the off-field stuff he's been going through. But yeah, they just seem to have found a formula of success at the moment. They just seem to, as Campo's banged on the drum for so many weeks on this show, they seem to have worked out that if they just sort of run the ball straight and just give both sort of sides of the ruck an equal chance to sort of expose those edges, that they're going to find some joy. And they did that in this game. Terrell May was outstanding. I said to you on the phone yesterday, why didn't we do the May try-scoring double? And apparently the other May scored in England as well. So
triple, he certainly did.
We should remind me, listeners, first week of May next year. Remind me to do that same bet with the May brothers all to score. But yeah, Terrell's been a revelation for them. He was sensational again on Friday. And Brisbane, this is another kind of game where I didn't really learn a whole lot about them just because of the injuries that they took. And chief among them is Adam Reynolds. Now, I have said repeatedly on the show, you could show me Adam Reynolds, you know, being semi-decapitated like the nearly headless Nick Ghost in Hogwarts, and I'd still be like, nah, he'll be fine. This was different. This was a clear, like, this wasn't like him gingerly limping back to the ruck. This was grabbing his arm immediately and being like, get me off the field. And I was like, oh, he's done something to his arm here. And then sure enough, ruptured bicep. Same injury that fell Jamal Fogarty just a couple of weeks ago. And it's going to be a really tough period for them coming up, you'd think.
Yeah, I think Broncos fans felt like Moaning Myrtle on Friday night. That was tough. Like, you could see, like, I don't know nothing about science and what the body, but like, there was a depression where there should not be on his biceps, and it was pretty gruesome looking at it, mate.
Muscle injuries look so much grosser to me than at least with bone injuries, you're like, oh yeah, that's broken. Muscle injuries, it's like this has morphed into like some sort of parasite that's inside his body and is slowly eating him. Why does it look like that? That looks so creepy. Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah, 12 to 14 weeks, just awful news for them. And I'm not sure Jock Madden's going to be fit either. This week, which will come off against the West Tigers. So I don't know if they have to put Tristan Saylor there. That's not going to be ideal. But it's so weird because that little period after he came off, like I think they were down 18-6 and they go bang, bang, two tries in.
As I said, mate, if Mann doesn't go off, they probably had a chance of winning this game.
Yeah, absolutely right. And on top of that, mate, Jesse Arthur's, I think, 6 weeks, they've said, with a fractured jaw. And obviously Dean Mariner got Simbin as well in that period for the shoulder charge on James Tedesco. You said that you didn't learn a lot from the Broncos. Like, so they get back to 18-all. Where do you think it went wrong after that? Was it simply just losing troops? Do you think they may have – do you think they should have parked that Cavalier style? Like, I know you've got to take it with Reece Walsh, but I think he had 4 errors on Friday night, and obviously his outside men putting down passes for him. But where do you think it actually went wrong for them in this game?
Yeah, I think that was a part of it, right? And that, but I think I would never try to harness that if I was Kevin Walters, and credit to him, he's always sort of managed that situation to the best of his abilities. Like, he's never tried to tell Reece Walsh to sort of calm things down when he needs to. Or when it might call for it, but it doesn't matter. Like, mate, well, it kind of went wrong. Like, they get it back to 18-0. Jordan Ricky puts the ball down. Dean Mariner shoulder charge and goes into the bin. Yeah. And that's obviously the other part where it went down. So they go down to 12 men in, what, the 54th minute. And the Roosters score 2 tries while he's off the field. And, yeah, it's hard to come back at that point. But I do hope that they just never go away from that. Like, it didn't work tonight. But it's the other reason they nearly won that grand final last year as well. Like, you've got to think about the fact that the way that they play has got them to where they are. And maybe they are a little bit different to other teams in the fact that there's never really any sense of, like, slowing down or playing conservative. It's always just chance your arm, give the ball to Reece and see if he can create anything. And, yeah, there'll be nights like this game where he overplays his hand a little bit and the outside guys put the ball down and it doesn't work. But there'll be other weeks where this stuff comes off. And eventually we are going to see it at some point this year when they put 50 points on the team. We are going to see that at some point. It wasn't in this game, but we will see it at some point. And I think it is such a shame that we made a big deal on the previous show of Brisbane being back to full strength and what a great deal this is. And yeah, they lose a key outside back and their captain in the space of, you know, a few minutes. And yeah, now they're back to not full strength again for the foreseeable future. They did win those 2 games in rounds like 6 and 7 without Adam Reynolds there. So I think if there is a team that has so much talent everywhere else that they could sustain the loss of their chief playmaker for 3 months, it is the Broncos. Don't really know if any other team outside of Penrith could do that. And I guess the silver lining is it happens so early in the season that, like, if you get to, like, round 22 or whatever it is, and he comes back and you're still firmly in that top 8, which they will be, right? Like, I don't think the loss of Adam Reynolds is going to be enough to drop Brisbane down from the team that we all know that they can be on their day. And so you get him back at the back end of the season, you're still floating around that top 4 spot, then I think everything should still be fine. But as for this game, the Roosters were just too good and they took advantage of the breaks that they were given, both in terms of injuries, the sin bins, everything else. And then they just went on with it. And this is 2 weeks in a row where they've really put an opponent to the sword, which hasn't really been their MO in recent times. So I think if you're a Roosters fan, you just could not be happy with how the last fortnight's gone.
Well, I just want to give another shout out to one of the Roosters players. I thought Joseph Suoliti, and actually I'm not on the Origin hype train with him, but I thought this was one of his better games for the Roosters, not just this year, but maybe his whole career with them, because he ran the ball hard. And I know he's on different sides of the field, but I thought, we're talking about the 2 left centres, thought he completely outplayed Selwyn Cobber on Friday night. And he got the try assist for one of the Crichton tries. And, yeah, he's probably hasn't had the impact a lot of people have been hoping for when they saw all those under 18, under 16 hype videos on YouTube. But he is slowly starting to get to that sort of promised land. And I thought this was maybe his best game against Katoni Staggs as well. No slouch. So, yeah, good to see from him. Obviously, they lose him at the end of the year. But I'm glad to see that we're starting to see the Suoliti that we were promised.
Yeah, me too, mate. Well said. Okay, let's move on to Saturday. A fiery fixture at Accor Stadium. You were there, Gabs. So, first of all, what's it like having Elgiana at the stadium?
Oh, mate, you know, some said it would never happen. I was one of them because every time I tried to get it there, it was just unavailable. But, you know, when you have the option between lukewarm party pies in the press box or, you know, some succulent Lebanese chicken, I know what I'm going to take. And the Elgiana, while it may have been slightly expensive, was absolutely delicious. It is damn good. Like, I don't know what we're going. You can have your Portuguese chicken. The Greeks do some good stuff, but damn, a good charcoal marinated chicken from Elgiana is hard to beat. That garlic sauce.
I can still have the garlic sauce. So I'm all in. I'm just still. I like. It's hilarious. That it's taken them what 25 years at that stadium to think, hey, maybe we should put something other than like the world's shittest hot dogs and hot chips in there. But it's glad. I mean, look, it's better late than never, I suppose. I'm glad that they are doing that. On the field, 17,000 there, much healthier crowd than on Thursday night for the Souths game. And another really decent performance from the Bulldogs. I thought the Tigers were game. I thought that they hung in there well, given no Happy Coruscant. And I think a lot of things went against them in this one. But, you know, the Bulldogs continue their unlikely rise into the top eight. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it was a pretty slow start by them. I thought they kind of looked like a team that had had the bye. They were a little bit rusty. I thought that bye actually came at the worst possible time for them, even though they had a few niggling injuries. But, yeah, I think the Tigers got the jump on them early in that first half. And when I go into these games, Bungard, the ones that I'm not too G'd about, I'm obviously thinking, what puns can I get to make this the most creative match report? So, look, I'd warned Work that they're getting five or six Star Wars puns, and they were well and truly exhausted by halftime. But then a lot changed after the break. The Bulldogs woke up, and as I mentioned to Seraldo after the game, I thought Viliami Kikau set the tone for that. I think his first two carries after halftime, he ran for about, I want to say conservatively, 30, 35 metres, but he was just skittling blokes. And he didn't do that in the first half, and that really sort of lifted that left edge. Matt Burton started to get more involved. He actually also popped up on the right, which I thought was nice. And look, Drew Hutchison's had his haters this year. I think that's fair to say. It was nice to see him put in that kick for Josh Curran. I thought he had one of his better games this season. And yeah, I mean, their centres. A lot of hate for the club. Like, you lose your local juniors, you lose Alamotti, you lose Avarillo. And there's a lot of criticism at the time, and I get that. Like, this is a club, they've spruiked the fact they want to give the young local guys a go. But tell you what, Stephen Crichton, and to his credit, Bronson Cherry, like, he's had a pretty fair start in his comeback season as well. Thought they both carried the ball really, really strongly. Definitely got the better of their opponents on Saturday. And I think the scoreboard flattered the Tigers in the end. I thought the Bulldogs really could have kicked clear. Probably just the stop-start nature didn't really suit what the Bulldogs wanted to do. And, Bulldogs march on, still in the top eight.
Yeah, so you were there covering the game. What did you get from the teams afterwards about that sort of fracas towards the end that saw the rare double sin bin?
The rare double sin bin. Well, John Bateman says he still doesn't know what David Clemmer was sent to the sin bin for. Like, obviously,
David Clemmer would never abuse a referee. He'd never be dissentful at all.
We're talking almost 10 years. Yeah, same venue.
What a day.
What a day. Well, it was, you felt something was coming. And I think, look, it set the tone early when Aiden Caesar wasn't sent to the sin bin. Like, I don't know what the bunker was saying. There were no mitigating factors. That was a horror tackle. Everyone like gasped when they saw the replay in the press box. Mm. It was a shocking tackle. Yeah. And like, I went pretty hard. I said, how the hell is no sin bin? Actually, someone from the NRL messaged me back and said, mate, you've been to enough Annesley press conferences. You know that wasn't a hip drop tackle. And I said, yeah, well, it was. And I think the charge sheet proved that I was correct with a 4-game suspension for him. Yeah, as I said, really stop-start, a lot of six agains, a lot of penalties in that game. And look, Casey Vadger had warned John Bateman a couple of times about dissent. Do not say anything, like you're pushing the limit here. So to her credit, she warned them. So if Clemmer did say something, he had to go, let's get to the Alex Seyfarth brain snap. Like, what are we doing? So it's 2 games in a row now at a core where Reid Marnie, he's got under the skin. We spoke to him after the game. He gave a really good line. So he said, I think people get big man syndrome because they don't like little people talking up to them. Maybe that's their fault, not mine. So he's probably been yapping the whole game. Probably said something to Seyfarth in this scuffle. And then he's just launched the Glasgow kiss, the headbutt from hell. Could have been a send-off. That was ugly.
It doesn't matter when there's 7 minutes left, right? It's much of a muchness. Like, sure. It's the same punishment. But yeah, I agree with you. It's just hilarious. Like, Marnie's a guy that I have immense respect for as a little shithouse myself. I have a lot of time for Reid Marnie and our forefathers, guys like Michael Ennis, Chris Sandow, et cetera, et cetera. Like any little dude that rolls up all these big guys is always got my heart. So I love it when I can see this happen. It was a shame we didn't see Alex Seyfarth squaring up to him in the tunnel afterwards, of course. How does he do it? Like, it's not like these guys, like, surely your entire sporting life and your school life, for that matter, you've been subjected to kids like Reed Marnie, like little smart asses. How are you now grown adult men and this is still working on you?
I don't know, but what he's doing, it is working brilliantly.
Keep doing it, Reed. Keep doing it.
He's getting poor, though. He's been fined 3 times in his past 2 games for all these little incidents. I called him the Phantom Menace, one of my many Star Wars puns during the games. Like, they've been crying out for someone like this since Michael Ennis left. Like, Serraldo's spoken, like, in the past, they've been bullied by teams. There was that game at Shark Park last year where the Sharks just feasted through the middle. They need to stand up, and they've got Marnie, they've got Stephen Crichton. Now, he won't take a backward step at all. So I'm really, I love it.
The Bulldogs are in a better place when they've got a Lebanese outside back and a smart ass playing number 9. Corey Hughes, Michael Ennis, Reed Marnie joins that list. And of course, the big Wahash carrying on the legacy that has on Masri left behind. But they're just in a better place when they have that.
Yeah, they got to do that Fox, get the mic, get him mic'd up. I need to hear what Marty's saying. Just do it, Reed, one time. We'll pay the fine. Who cares?
I'm worried that if they mic'd him up, he'd sanitize it for that week. Like, you know, sometimes
I reckon he doesn't have an off switch. I reckon he'd keep going, mate. We'll get to the Tigers in a sec, but as I mentioned earlier, not the greatest first half, and then things got really weird at halftime. I don't know if you saw any of the videos, but the Wiggles came out for I'll call it a 3-minute set. I haven't seen the Wiggles for like 25, 30 years. So all of these characters were new. I didn't recognize any of them. There were characters who I thought I knew who must be long gone. It was weird. There was no singing. There was like a DJ. They were all carrying on. And I hope I never see it again. I'm done with the Wiggles.
You're done with the Wiggles.
I'm done after that. I don't know what that was. My Wiggles. Yeah.
This is the Wiggles I grew up with.
Exactly.
Was there any Star Wars related sort of paraphernalia at the stadium?
No. No, they missed a trick.
The Dogs had a Star Wars jersey 1 year, didn't they? Or did I imagine that?
No, that certainly happened. I remember the Stormtroopers and Darth Vader. And absolutely. Okay,
good. What's going on with the Tigers? They're barely better than Souths. They won 2 games and they haven't really pulled up any tricks. Like, they've been well beaten. You know, like, I mean, I know this game was only 8 points, but I didn't think they were really much chance of winning this game as the game progressed. And this is now a few weeks in a row where you've had this same feeling of sort of resignation watching the Tigers. Like, yeah, this game's over. Like, they didn't stand much of a chance against the Broncos. The week before that, I thought they started well against Penrith, but again, that game just got away from them pretty quickly. And then that Dragons game as well. Like, they gave a good account of themselves against the Dolphins, but it's been tough going for the last month or so. And now they're going to lose Aiden Caesar for 4 weeks as well after that hip drop tackle. So where do you think they go from here? And is it just a case of we all kind of knew this season was going to be a tough one and it's looking ahead to 2025?
Well, I hope not, because look, it's 5 losses in a row now. They've got the worst attack, and that's the upsetting thing, because in the first half they chance their arm. Like, Charlie Staines scores a brilliant team try from started inside their own half. We didn't see any of that in the second half, and Benji even said that. Like, they dipped their toe, they just didn't have a crack. And I know they were without Appy, but this shouldn't excuse a performance like that. This team can be a lot better. We saw that. I don't want that Cronulla win to be like their Penrith win of last year. I don't want that to be just a completely random 2 competition points that proves nothing. Like, this team has shown they can do it, but I'm not saying play like the 2005 Tigers by no means. They don't have the cattle for that. But play like the 2024 Tigers. I want to see some craft around the ruck. I want to see them move the ball. Brent Naden is a competent ball runner. Justin Ollam can skittle people. Just didn't see enough of that, and you're right. Look, they are above South at the moment, but mate, it's getting to the point where you can't really see the wins, and their fans will be annoyed if they just completely shut up shop and just think, okay, 2025, Luai, Taruva, good. No. We do need to actually start seeing the stuff that you did against Para, the stuff that you did against the Sharks, because what we've seen in the past 5 weeks has been really, really disappointing.
I agree. Well said, mate. Hopefully, who have they got this week? I haven't checked. Hopefully they can turn it around for their fans. Like, let me see. Oh, the Newcastle Knights in Tamworth. There you go.
Scully Park.
Wow, what a super Saturday that is. Knights, Tigers into Souths, Dragons. Wow. Storm Sharks main event.
Storm Sharks.
Okay, the rest of that is dire, but it's a nice... That's 4 hours of suffering for beforehand. But yeah, okay. So maybe they'll win that. The Knights aren't particularly good, but we'll see. They've been pretty gritty the last couple of weeks. Okay, moving ahead. Titans 20, your beloved Melbourne Storm 22. They pulled it out of the bag. The Titans play them well, as we know.
Always playing well, mate. I'm not used to these low-scoring dour affairs when these two teams play. It's usually some batshit crazy.
Again, this is like the kind of a bit like the Manly one, where there was a shitload of points in the first 45 minutes, and then just nothing, at all. But you did enough, and you're still going.
Yeah, well, all that nothingness kind of coincided with the everythingness when, unfortunately, Ryan Pappenhausen went down again. Small fracture in his fibula. The club has confirmed 4 to 6 weeks. Oh, man, that sucked. Like, there's a TV in the room where you do the media conferences at a call, and it was probably a good thing that the Bulldogs pressure had finished, because I saw out of the corner of my eye Paps slamming the ground and going back down. I thought, oh, God, no. What's happened here? It was just awful to see, mate, because for that, it was a 10-minute stretch where they looked perfect. Like, the passing was so crisp. It's something we haven't really seen from the Storm, like, with Paps gone last year, but even at the start of the year, passes weren't quite hitting the mark. But the past few weeks, it has started to come together, obviously, in that South Sydney game. And just the link play between Munster and Pappenhausen and Bloor on that left edge was wonderful. And, oh, man, to see him go down and then Sua Fartlonga to come up for an HIA and then not finish the game as well. What are we doing here, Bungard?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And for Longo again, what a try. This guy just looks amazing every time I get a glimpse of him. Like, it's remains to be seen what his path to first grade is in this Storm setup, because they've got so many good players. But once he gets an established role in the team, or in a different team, if that's what it takes, he's gonna be a guy that I'm gonna really enjoy watching for the next few years, I think. So with Pappenhausen down, is he gonna sort of feature in their plans going forward, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think Tyron Wishart at fullback is really going to happen anytime soon. Nick Meaney's obviously there, but I don't think they want to break up that edge, although Will Warbrick had another really, really tough game.
Had a tough season.
And we'll get to the Titans in a sec, but I was stunned that they dropped Alifiana Khan Pereira for the mere reason we know that Warbrick rushes in. He's not the quickest bloke. I thought, given the Titans' explosiveness on that left edge, I really thought that was something they could have exploited, but no, they put Jojo Fifita there and couldn't take advantage. But back to your question, yes, I think Fa'alongo goes to fullback because Xavier Cosa, hamstring injury wasn't that bad. Like, apparently if it was a grand final, he would have played. So he should be back for this Cronulla game. You're right, though. That move he put on, I think, turned Sami inside out. That was gorgeous.
He's special. The Titans just look a lot more dynamic with what they're doing at the moment, don't they? Like, they seem to have stumbled upon, like, what works. Again, I think that Dave Fifita starting, like, why were we not doing this? AJ Brimson in the middle of the field, why were we not doing this? Like, giving Kieran Foran the keys to the car, why were we not doing this? Like, these are all things that made sense. Like, we're just dudes, right? We're just guys who watch footy. We're not super coaches. We're not premiership-winning geniuses like Des Hasler. But, like, how are these very basic stuff that even the most moronic of rugby league fan could have seen from week one was like, yeah, maybe your best player should start, and maybe your like most dynamic and influential player should play in the middle of the field, and maybe your like by a distance smartest player should be the halfback. I don't know. Am I crazy, Marty?
Well, I think this really sums it up. So a week before the season kicks off, captain's launch, although he's not the captain, he was there. Brimson says, yep, I want to be the best center in the world. Sweet, cool, that's what you want to hear, guy. Switching position. 2 weeks ago, he's interviewed by, I think it was NRL.com, and he says, I hope I never play center again. So I think that kind of tells you exactly his thoughts on that failed experiment. I don't, the J probably doesn't stand for journalism in AJ. I'll go with absolute jet. You can pick whatever you want. Mate, he was phenomenal.
I love him, man. He's such a player.
Oh, I don't know what I like more. Is it the agility? Is it the strength? Is it just him willing to put in kicks on third and just back himself to get there?
I love his support. He's such a good support player as well. Mm. Like it's kind of a dying art to an extent, and he's one of the best at it still. Like he's so good at it. Yeah, it's just like
he's terrific.
I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm glad we've kind of been vindicated. I know they didn't win this game, but they won last week, and I did say that like, and Campbell agreed. The Titans were not as bad as their ladder position indicated. Like, yes, they hadn't won a game, but like. They'd been right in some of these. They were right in that Manly game. They were right in that Canberra game. Like they started really well in that Dolphins game. I think they were up like four. They were right in there in the first few minutes. And it was only really a couple of games that really got away from them. And then you just thought that getting Fifita back starting and moving these guys around positionally, that things would figure themselves out and they'd win a few games. And I think that's what we're going to get going forward. I don't think the Cowboys are. So like their next two games, Gold Coast against the Cowboys, Suncorp against the Knights at Magic Round, and then a 4X derby against the Broncos. So they don't leave Southeast Queensland for the next month because they've got a bye after that, then a home game against Souths. So they don't leave Southeast Queensland again until the 15th of June. It's the 6th of May right now. So, you know, decent little homestand for them coming up. They can jag a couple of wins there. You'd fancy their chances against the Tigers at Leichhardt. And then they're back at home, then they have another bye. So they leave Southeast Queensland once. Between now and the 5th of July, which is 2 months from now. And that is a trip to Coffs Harbour, which isn't that far away. And then they're back at home again. They just never leave. God, I want to be one of these shit teams that gets a fucking cupcake draw every year. God, it'd be nice.
So, Titans premiers, you're telling me there's a chance. Mate. I thought, look, one of the big things in this one, look, according to you, Tino is still out, I believe it or not. And he ain't
I believe
back
Tino is still
soon,
out, yes.
Unfortunately. I believe they really missed Mo Fotowaka. And when you've got Joe Stimson in the middle against the Storm, that's probably an area you can actually beat up on the Storm with your middles, especially with no Tui Kamikamitha. Thought they really, really lacked some punch through there. I think if Mo plays, they may even win this one. Do you want to talk about the refereeing? Because there are a couple of crazy calls, I thought, in this one. Philip Sami try, where he's laughing. He knows it's a no try. He drops the ball over the line. He even tells his teammates it is not a try. And they give it a try. We can't be having that bungard. He dropped it.
I feel like if a player says, I didn't score, we should forego the bunker. We should just be like, we don't need this.
He was cracking up like he heard the funniest joke of all time. It was wild that they gave this one. And then obviously the game finishes with the Storm awarded a penalty for a strip where Nick Meaney loses the ball.
That was a ridiculous call. That was absolutely outrageous.
Cold drop.
Yeah.
Just a cold drop. I don't know where you get stripped from. I mean, if they're going to come up with some bonkers excuse, you can say, I don't know, he's tried to pass the ball and maybe Fifita's touched it for a six again, but to call that a strip, like James Graham fired up and he was right.
And Munster, like the first Storm try of the night comes after a really strong period from the Titans where they've dominated territory, they've got the lead. And Suofolonga gets tackled too hard and they got a – like what was that penalty for?
I think
it was called a high tackle, but like it was Harley Smith Shields, right? Yeah. And it was called a dangerous tackle, and it was like it hit him around the shoulders. Like it was, I don't know. And Melbourne scored straight from it. So some very bizarre calls from both the on-field refs and the bunker, especially with that strip call at the end. Like that's not the on-field referee's fault
at all.
That's just bad process, bad outcome. But good for you because you're a Storm fan.
Happy days, and now we can finally get to that Scott Drinkwater stuff. Drink up, fantastic. People! Don't forget.
Yeah, not Josh Drinkwater. I've been good at that this year. I don't think I've called him Josh Drinkwater yet this year.
Well, funny you say, what is the name that people get wrong the most? Because I reckon this year we've got a few. Zach Hoskins, people
love.
Yeah,
that's a good one. That's a good one.
Love and yes.
Well, I mean, like for Warren Smith, it might be Jaden Sewer.
Oh, my
God. He called him Jaden Sewer like five times.
Every time he touched the ball, Jaden
Sewer's
like,
playing
no.
on both sides of the field. This is a remarkable. Fantastic.
Attack of the Clones. There we go.
Yeah, Hoskins is a great one. Alex Johnson.
Alex Johnson, Kurt Capel, Luke Capel.
Yeah, I haven't done it this year either. I've been good. Yeah. I've been good this year, Marty. I've been locking in. Yeah. That was my off-field, that was my off-season resolutions, was don't call people by the wrong name. I haven't done it this year yet. Although, Shout out Luke Capel, though. What a player.
Mine was not eat a party pie at the stadium. Unfortunately, that lasted two rounds. So I'm not as good as you. Oh, well.
I also haven't had a party pie at the stadium yet. So. Dolphins 28, Cowboys 26, a back and forth ding-dong affair, as they say. I just can't get a read on the Dolphins at this point. Their red zone attack is so impressive. Like, their shapes and their shifts are really nice. Like, it just feels like they're one of the better. I don't have the numbers in front of it. It feels like they're very good at converting red zone opportunities into tries. Katoa continues to impress me. And they took the advantages that they were given in this game. But I just want to jump to the very end of the game first.
Yeah.
That's a penalty, right? That is a penalty. That's exactly what Sean Johnson got a penalty for against Manly 2 weeks ago that sent the game to Golden Point. But the difference was Drinkwater didn't fall over. So it was play on. And I don't want to get to a point where players have to. And it's the same thing in soccer. Like, we've all been there. Like, I've played my whole life. Like, if you get kicked in the leg when you're dribbling in the box, like, and you stay on your feet, your reward is nothing. There is no punishment for honor. And it's the same thing here. If Drinkwater goes down and clutches his leg or something, like, this game goes to Golden Point. And I don't want the game to be like that. I don't want us to have a situation where it's the same thing with high tackles, right? People criticize players for staying down. But if you only get the penalty if you stay down for a crusher or a high tackle or whatever, if referees are going to miss these infringements, that's not their fault. There's a million things going on. I get that. Maybe we could have two referees. Who knows? But if referees are going to miss that stuff unless you stay down and allow the bunker to adjudicate on it, then I don't blame players for staying down. I've always been pretty firm about my stance on that in this argument about players staying down to win penalties. I've always found the sort of nomenclature around that is strange as well, because to me, it's not, you're not winning a penalty, right? Like, You've been the victim of foul play. The fact that you are in, the fact that it has damaged you, like, there's a sliding scale between what Drinkwater and Lachlan Ilias, right? And every kicker infringement is on that sliding scale somewhere. It's a penalty regardless of whether nothing happens to you or your leg is broken. But in this case, because he was fine, it was playable.
That's really, really, really well said, because it's not gamesmanship at this point. Like, if something has happened, he said you're right. You've earned the penalty. Like, they've stuffed up. The defense has got it wrong. They've hit you. There's been an illegal play. If the referee misses it, well, we do have a bunker. So just stay down for that 5 seconds. And you're right. It's not a great look, especially when you see him jump up the second the whistle is blown. But the injury doesn't really matter, right? It's the act, not the outcome. So yeah, fair play to Scott Drinkwater for getting up and not
what's his reward? Losing the game. Fantastic.
Yeah. I did like the setup. Like, I thought they stuffed
up. Yeah, that's cool. I'm wondering why teams, I've always thought, like, why teams, like, remember that, I know you ended up scoring in the corner with Coates scoring the greatest try of all time, but, like, I found that kind of strange. And I'm like, oh, geez, the Storm have gone too deep here. Like, they're going to have to score a try now because they've gone way too deep, way past the 40. But the Cowboys, they set it up beautifully. And, you know, on another day, that kick was pretty close. It got pretty close.
Well, the only thing they got wrong there was that Valentine Holmes got tackled the previous play. Yeah, I feel like if he takes that shot.
So, Val, make your conversion.
I don't know if they kick it, but yeah, I know.
That was a pretty easy one. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was asked, do you have to think about the kicking change? He said no, but he should have kicked them.
Yeah. I mean, can you think, like, you're better at the stuff than I am. Can you think of the last, like, high profile kicking change mid season that a team did?
Ooh.
I can't off the top of my head. I should have asked you earlier, because I'm sure you could find it if you thought about it.
But yeah, I just wonder if there was one at Penrith, maybe. Did they switch from Maloney to Cleary, or were they always with Maloney? It's a good question. I mean,
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have sprung this on you with
no, you're all right. Did someone at the Knights, maybe, like, was Hastings kicking and then Ponga may have taken over? I feel like there have been a few. Yeah, there have certainly been a few.
Anyway, like, Holmes hasn't been great this year. He's been okay. But he hasn't been, like, terrible. But, like, you know, there was a 2 out of 5 in a game that they won by 1 point. There's 2 out of 4 in that game they lost by 7 against the Eels. And there's 2 out of 4 against Penrith and 3 out of 5 in this game. So some close games where he's missed a few kicks. But, yeah, look, I mean, I don't think they're going to – I think that's the least of their worries right now, to be honest with you. Most of their worries is their goal line defense is terrible, and they just aren't the dynamic sort of team that they should be on paper.
I know. And you talk about, yeah, that their left edge, I thought, really got found out on Saturday night. Like you mentioned Katoa. Shout out to Cody Nikorima. Like, I know he's been the punching bag sometimes. Like,
ball no playing in this game was very good.
Yeah. Four tries is fair effort. And I think about Holmes, his goal kicking, I thought his defense was actually pretty poor in this one. And Jay Cabrera.
His defense has been poor all year.
It has, yeah, and a lot of errors as well. He's not really not having a good year, old Valentine. But Jay Cabrillo, look, I know there's a lot of doom and gloom when Herbie Farnworth got injured, but, you know, there has been a silver lining with Averillo moving from the left to the right. I think he's a lot better on the right than he is on the left. And the combination with Osako, as we saw on Saturday, it's electric. Like, I know they started with Herbie there, but look, he made a grand final playing on the left. I wonder when he comes back from this AC joint injury, whether he returns or if Bennett has to bite the bullet and be like, well, with Tessie New injured as well now, does he have to return on the left?
Yeah, it's a great question. They've got a lot of things to work out. But like in terms of their performance, I thought I was really impressed with them. Like again, like they started slow, but they just didn't go away from what worked and they stuck with it. And this is a Cowboys team now that I think we have to start having some more long-term conversations about. Well, I gave them a pass for 2023. I don't really know why I did that, but like, you know, we gave them a pass for 2023. You know, teams have down years, but in similarly to the Rabbitohs, they're doing basically what they did last year again, and they haven't really diverted from that whatsoever. It's the same sort of thing. It's the same inability to pull away in games that they should be, and in games where they're clearly the second best team, they're just getting smashed like they did last week. And home games against teams like the Dolphins used to be bankers for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. They're not anymore. And no. What do they change?
Well, mate, everyone, well, we saw one that we might have to see going forward. So obviously this was not by design, but Jake Clifford comes in, right, for Chad Townsend. And I don't think he was the issue on Saturday night. In fact,
and he kicked the best 40-20 I've ever seen.
What a bomb
for a 40-20.
He knew what he was doing. But
he kicks that ball high, man. He kicks it high.
And he, mate, he can kick goals as well if they do. You do want to make a change. But I thought his bombs, actually, he put Fuller under pressure every time he went to the sky. I'm really disappointed with their forward pack. Now, we are told that, oh, they've got too many forwards. What are they going to do? Oh, they can afford to lose one. No, they can't. The Dolphins bench totally outplayed them. Mark Nichols made a break. Josh Kerr, a lot of speed, a lot of aggression off the bench. The Cowboys, I think they had two forwards run for 100 metres. That's not good enough. This is a team that really, really.
Sam McIntyre, 28 minutes, one run.
Well, jeez. That's
Hylam Lukey, 29 minutes, three runs.
That's not good enough, right? Well,
Kefi Funafuaki, six runs in the near full game that he played. Like, they're just not getting anything from some of these guys. Like, even, yeah, like I know they lost Jordan McLean, but like, if anything, that should bump up the numbers for the rest of the guys.
Oh, man.
Not the reverse. Yeah. Like, how do you lose a starting prop in the first 15 minutes? And then the knock-on effect from that is that none of your forwards have more meters than they normally would. Make it make sense to me, Marty.
Look, I'll enroll at Make It Sense University, do my 4-year masters, and I'll come back in.
Yeah, if you take out the kick meters for Neem and Taumalolo, they both drop below 100 as well. So their most meters was Rube Cotter with 102 from 12 runs. So I give me the fucking ball nominee, by the way, Rube Cotter in this game. A fantastic try. close to getting it for this week, but he has just fallen short. But
yeah, good.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. Their forward pack is their big problem. They've still got so much talent in the back line. Tom Dearden's been a great player. I agree with you. I think Clifford came in and didn't look out of place at all. And I've always been a Chad Townsend guy. Drinkwater, say what you will about his flaws, but he's dynamite with ball in hand. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just their forward pack, mate. I just don't know how you fix it. Is it as simple as like Taumalolo was so good for so long that the rising tide lifts all boats, and because he was so good and every time he made a run, it took four dudes to tackle him. It just makes life so much easier for everybody else taking the carry after him. Is it as simple as the fact that he's not that guy anymore has had the residual effect of making everybody around him worse?
It can't be, but there may be an element. One thing that they need to change, like it, You mentioned Finifuiaki and a few other guys who have the ability and we know can get quick
play. I've been a big fan of him this year, but he was poor in this game.
We need to see, maybe they do just need to simplify it a little bit. Lay that play. Reece Robson, like, we all know he's one of the best runners of the football. His runs this year, I don't know the stats in front of me, I'd say they've dropped off a cliff. He's not asking those questions around dummy half like he did at the in years gone by. I think there was that Dragons game maybe at Cogra. I think he had 3 try assists. That was his best game of the season. But outside of that, man, it's been a bit predictable. The defense kind of knows where it's going with him. And, yeah, I think if he can get back to sniping around the ruck, maybe that creates a little bit more room for these big boys to get rolling. But at the moment, their pack is getting bullied, which you never would have thought would happen when you look at those names.
No, absolutely not. Concerning times ahead. Who have they got this week?
Well, they've got the Titans, don't they?
That's right. We just talked. Come on, Matt. Be better. Yeah, Titans. If they lose that, then that's, come on, what are we doing? Mm. And then they play the Grand Old Club at Magic Round. So, if they play 16th, 17th back-to-back, you know, there's some... Could be having some very different conversations at the Cowboys in 2 weeks' time. Okay, let's get down in the slop at Turton Road. Oh, boy, I loved this performance from the Knights. I thought they were fantastic. They were so gritty. They were so determined. A absolute avalanche of Sean Johnson putting up the nastiest bombs you will ever see in the worst conditions you'll ever see, and they did not bend. They did not break. The Newcastle Knights have gritted out 2 very impressive wins in a row, and this one, I know this game was full of errors and it was wet and it was gross. I loved it. I really enjoyed this game. I really, really enjoyed how the Knights played.
Oh, man, just on those Johnson kicks, there was one he put up in the second half.
I think, that floating torpedo bomb. Oh, fucking hell. God. You could give me 100 goes. You could give anyone 100 goes. No one's going. Like, I think David Armstrong let that bounce by a good 5 meters. And I was like, yep, that's the play. That's the play here.
That was Jesus abysmal. Christ.
That was one of the most nasty kicks I've ever seen. And he had a few others that weren't quite as good as that one, but were still very, very, very threatening. But first of all, both teams, pretty impressive error rate rise in the conditions. Both teams completing at 80%. But yeah, I think that defensively, some of the efforts from some of these Knights players in this game was sensational. That was Dane Gagai's best game in a couple of years. I haven't looked at the Dalian points for this game. I assume he got a couple. Did he get a couple, Marty? You know.
I think there were 5 people who got. There were a couple of games where a lot of people got votes. I think he got 5. Let me just double check.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah, but I'll keep talking while you check that. And like, he was great defensively. Kai Piss-Paul was great defensively. Bradman Best, again, sensational defensively. Attack, both games, both teams are a bit disjointed attack, but you expect that in these conditions. But especially in the back half of this game, when the Warriors had so many chances on the Newcastle line, they just didn't bend. They just didn't break, and they bent, but they didn't break. And the only time they kind of did break was probably the flashpoint incident in this game, which we do have to talk about. And that's the Dallin Watene-Zalesniak not penalty try. So, Marty, like, I've always been pro penalty tries. I've always thought that we need to give them out more than we do. And I think that the game has gone in the right direction with that stuff. I think we do give them out now more than we used to in the past. And I know people love to go, oh, you have to be sure a try would have been scored. First of all, you don't. It's that you think a try would have been scored.
Yeah.
But even if it wasn't, even if it was, are you sure a try would have been scored? I'm sure Dallin Watene-Zalesniak scores that try if he's not tackled in the air. And so why, apparently, and so I asked Dean Robb, our refereeing correspondent, about this, and apparently it was just decided that these wouldn't be penalty tries. And I have to ask why, because for me, it doesn't get any more clear cut than, well, if you're not allowed to tackle people in the air anymore, and he caught the ball in the air in the in goal and is on a one-way ticket to the ground whilst holding the ball, and the only thing that stopped him from grounding it was an illegal tackle in the air. How is that not a penalty try?
I don't have the answer because I think you've answered it with all your rhetorical questions. It's absolutely a penalty try, like any act of foul play, any indiscretion in the act of scoring when, as you said, not a certainty to score, but in the opinion of the person in the bunker. And I think everyone but the person in the bunker, even the referee, I'm pretty sure, as Scott Bailey tweeted, you could hear in the comms mic, said, yep, I agree, probably should have been, he would have scored. Well, if you think he would have scored, call it a penalty try.
That's like when a politician tweets, oh, we need to do something about this poverty. It's like, yeah, you're the guy that can do something about this. Like, yeah, what are you talking about?
It was clear, like, he got over him. He was going down. He's dropped it, what, inches before the ground. Mate, it's a penalty try. I'm glad Webster didn't use it in the post-match to say, oh, we would have won if we get that try. But, yes, that's an absolute try. So, just to the Daly M stuff, mate. Gagai got four. So four players got votes in that one. Five players got votes in the Cowboys game. And this could be a record. Six people got votes in the Sharks-Dragons game.
Well, six is the most that can get votes. So yes, that would have to be the record.
It's a record.
So shout out Dean Robb said, rule only changed a year ago or so to ban attackers being tackled in the air. Interpretation is to not include that as part of penalty try considerations. Don't ask why.
Well, someone better ask Annesley why today.
Mate, you might have to take a break from your vacation just to get down there and sort him out, because it's a nonsense. It's an absolute no. First of all, I hate the rule. Like, I understand why it's in there, but like, what are you meant to do? Like, how are you meant to stop guys from scoring in that situation? But also, if we are going to go down that route and we're going to ban mid-air tackles in attacking situations because it's a safety reason, then I don't know how you can't just be like, yeah, it's a try. I don't know.
Because I think they changed the rule in the Super League a few years ago, and I think their policy was to award a penalty try, so you were seeing a lot of them. And I'm guessing, given that we haven't really heard a lot about it since, they may have relaxed their stance on it. But yeah, this is something the NRL needs to address today, because when you've got guys like Lomax and Coates, these aerial threats, if defending teams now know that they can tackle them in the act of scoring and not risk giving away a penalty try, well, I think we're going to see tactics change, and that's not what we want.
Not at all. But yeah, back to the game. The Knights just defended so gamely. They were very gutsy, and some really nice ball playing to put Daniel Saifidi over for what was the pivotal try late on. And this is now two really impressive wins in a row for them. I think you could be forgiven for thinking that things were going to be done and dusted when Ponga was ruled out for the foreseeable future. But to the credit to the rest of that playing group, they've now come out there 2 weeks in a row and just buckled down, defended well, and gone back to what the Knights do well. I think this is, you know, you might be forgiven for thinking that a team with Kalen Ponga is at their best when they're playing swashbuckling rugby league and throwing the ball around, but that's not what Newcastle do. This is a Knights team that's built with a bunch of very physical guys in the forward back and some absolute bruisers out wide who are good both defensively and in attack. And yeah, they've got guys like Bradman Best and Dane Gagai that can score a try, but those guys can defend as well. And Gagai, both in terms of tackling and in kick defense, was unbelievable in this game. And the way that they just absorb wave after wave of Warriors pressure in this one, I thought was super impressive. I'm very, very impressed with Newcastle in this one.
Yeah, and just a couple of other shout-outs. I thought Greg Marju probably had his best game of the year. Like,
very important some games, carries.
Yeah, he's been really quiet, but in those conditions, you need your wingers to dominate, and I thought he was terrific carrying it from the backfield. Compare that to Dallin, who had one run in the first 34 minutes. I thought Marju completely dominated that battle. Leo Thompson as well. I know you guys have mentioned him a few times on the pod this season. I think that time with the Kiwis last year has really, really benefited him, because I thought he really led from the front, held his own against Adam Fanua Blake. He was tremendous. And yeah, mate, 16,000 fans in that weather. That's the performance they expect, and it's the performance they got. So very, very happy for them. The Warriors, though, like you said, that the Knights were able to repel a lot because they had a lot of ball. They were camped on Newcastle's line for long stretches on Sunday. But, mate, that right edge attack that lit up the league last year, what is doing? I mean, it is slow. It is predictable. How many times did Chance get the ball with Dallin on his outside, have to stop and then cut back off his right because just the timing wasn't quite there?
Yeah, quite a few, as it turns out. Yeah, it was tough. People were criticizing Chance a little bit for his role in that. And, oh, he butchered this overlap. You've got to give him a chance. It's like, well, if he's not in position, he can't just throw it to no one. And yeah, I agree with you, mate. There just was no fluidity at all there. It was very clunky on that right edge. It is honestly a little bit similar to South in that regard, but obviously flipping to the other side of the field. But the exact same problems that Souths have had on their left in large batches, both in 2023 at the end and to start this year. And I don't really see a fix for it in the immediate future. Maybe it's just one of those things that teams have wised up to a little bit. Like the Knights did a really good job of jamming in on them every time they shifted the ball to the right. There was plenty of times in that second half, especially, where Johnson and Nicol Klukstad were caught with the ball in hand on like the fourth or fifth tackle. And that was by design. That was because those Knights defenders were shooting up and not giving them a chance to get those spreads going. And That's what teams are doing to Souths on the left, and now that's what teams are going to do to the Warriors on the right, and they've got to work out how to fix it. Andrew Webster's a very good operator. I'm sure he's got a solution, but right now I think they do need to start going away from that a little bit, just trying something else.
Yeah, I think they really miss Murata Nuokora on that right edge, that punch he provides. Don't think Tomato Martin has quite been able to replace Luke Metcalf on the left, because, mate, since that South Sydney game, they've had, a draw and three losses?
It's not good.
They're not a bottom four team, right? But they are. You're only as good as your record says you are.
They're sitting 14th right now.
They're sitting 14th.
That reminds me.
Did want to mention, I know he had a tough game of the ball, but I thought Charles Nicoll-Cookshire's tackle on Dane Gagai. One of the best you'll see this season.
An absolute try save. I had no idea what happened, by the way. I was like, oh, yep, try. And then,
no try. Yeah.
They showed that reverse angle of him sliding across and just punching the ball out. And, yeah, sensational.
Terrific. But, yeah, the problem for the Warriors as well, they've got a pretty tough little stretch coming up as well.
They never win that game against the Roosters at Moore Park ever. So,
yeah. And then a tough one, I think I've got the Panthers maybe at Magic Round. That's a brutal little stretch.
Yeah, this was kind of like their little run that they were supposed to get things right, to sort of surge up the ladder a little bit. Like, they were expected to handle their – like, Manly's a tough game, but they were expected to handle their business. Dragons, Titans, Knights, that's three teams in a row that they were favourites in all three of those games, and they lost them all. And, now they're coming into Roosters in Sydney, Panthers up at Brisbane, which is a home game, and then – they'll get a home trip against the Finns at Go Media the week after that. But this could be – there's a very, very realistic scenario right now where we're looking at five losses in a row for the Warriors, which, given how much they set the league on fire last year, is just shocking.
Yeah, the fire's going out, man. And you can tell that by just how the lack of enthusiasm in your Go Media just then. I mean, usually –
yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stunned. Yeah, it just shows where the Warriors are.
Yeah, it's. I just got in front of me. So the Warriors won against the Roosters in 2018 at Allianz. But since then, they've lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row at all venues. So.
Was that like a 30-6 one or something? I think Sean Johnson got ruled out late. Yeah. Roosters scored the first try and then it went downhill quickly.
You are right. Mason Lino in the 18 played halfback. You're too good.
Yeah.
I'll give you $20 right now if you name the four players that were on the Warriors bench that day.
On the Warriors bench?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Make it quick, though. We got a podcast to continue.
Well, Sam Lasone suddenly seems like it's going to be too obvious an answer. I'm going to pass because this could be wild. Yeah.
The bench was Jazz Tavanga, Liggy Sau, Tevita Sarte, and Campo's favourite, Anthony Gelling. What a bench.
Yeah. Roosters couldn't handle
it. Couldn't
handle it.
Okay. And moving on to our final game of the round, Cronulla 20, St George Illawarra 10 in, again, reprehensible conditions. I loved the photos coming out overnight into Sunday morning of the pools of water at Shark Park. I thought we were going to get Sharknado 2.0 potentially, but the conditions weren't quite as bad as the time the game kicked off, but they were still very miserable conditions. And not a sellout at Shark Park is pretty rare these days, given how small the ground is and how good they've been going. But only 9,500 there, which I think is still quite a good effort given how miserable it looked. But yeah, Cronulla did enough in what was a pretty bad game.
Have you seen any of the Sharknado movies?
No.
Do you know how many there are?
I reckon there's like 6 now, right? How many are there?
I think you're right. I lasted like 15 minutes into the first one. Yeah. And I mean, there was just no builder. There was no plot. Like, just suddenly there was a Sharknado. Exactly.
I get it as a joke movie, like, once. Yeah. How have they squeezed 6 of the... I was right. There are 6. And 3 spin-off films. Sharknado, Heart of Sharkness.
Oh, God.
What the fuck? 6 of them. All right, sure. Why not?
Well, get a 7th one. Relive the actual Sharknado in the NRL. I'm sure that'll get the fans rolling up to Hoyts. I'd watch.
Yeah, I would too. Mate, it depends if Nico Hines is in it. look, some big beefy boys scoring tries for Cronulla. This is I know Tommy scores every week at this point, but like, this is not really the brand of the football. Like, the Sharks, we talked about how dynamic their outside backs are and how their forwards really are just there to kind of help lay a platform early doors, and then they shift the ball around and Mulatalo will score a couple and Rainey will score a couple and blah, blah, blah. But no, it was all beef all the time. Most notably,
You need the f***ing ball.
Give me the f***ing ball.
He was a nominee last week. He just missed out on the award, but he said, boys, I'll do you one better. I'll run it back. Tom Hazleton, give me the fucking ball.
Would you please pass me the ball, sir? Yes.
That's what he said.
That was barnstorming. You don't usually see him scoring the second half, right? Because that big first doesn't even come back on. But I think he just said to Nico, if you didn't give me this fucking ball right now, Nico, I'm going to do some naughty, naughty things. Yeah. And did some naughty, naughty things to the Dragons' defense because he left a few of them on the ground. Jeez, he's good to watch. I love him. Like, I wasn't there. I'm not sure you were there yesterday, but the chants apparently were very, very loud.
The Tommy chants on TV was shining through after he scored. It was great to see. But, yeah, dude, like, just he has been an absolute revelation for them. And we talked repeatedly in 2022 and 23 about how the biggest issue with the Sharks was their lack of power in the middle. And I know that they're getting Adam Fanua Blake for next year, and that's going to just take them over the top. I think they're going to be a real, real, real serious contender this year if they're not already. But Hazleton is another guy that's stepped up his game massively in the last few months. He's now at the point where he is a bona fide NRL starter, which, again, we were struggling to sort of put together a Sharks starting forward pack at times last year when we were sort of our most pessimistic about their forwards. But that's not the case now. This is now a team where Royce Hunt can't get in the team. This is now a team where they've moved Talakai into the middle, and I think it's a great effect. He got a try as well. And they're getting Toby Rudolph off the bench, and Oregon Kaufusi didn't think had a great 2023, but he's been okay this year. He's been very, very solid. And yeah, Hazleton is, I think, at the moment, until Fanua Blake gets there, their best prop, which is insane to say for a guy who was not in their first 17 at the start of last year.
Carried them when they had all those injuries earlier in the season in the middle. So you're right on that. And just the other two you mentioned, you're right. I thought Oregon Kaufusi last year was almost lucky to be playing first grade. I think it was either last week or 2 weeks ago. I think he punched out the first 40, just really held the middle for them. And Talakai, I don't think he quite knew what he was supposed to do off the bench in those first few games. But in this one, he was everywhere. He was on the right, almost scored a try on the right. He scores that try on the left. I thought he was getting a little bit wider this time to pick on the smaller plays in the defensive line. And that's what they need from him. No skill, no nothing. Just be you, be that
wrecking ball. They've got such a good formula at the moment.
Yeah.
Because they're getting – it's such a luxury when you have two very, very, very good 80-minute back rowers, which they do in Nicker and Wilton. Like, you don't have to worry about that at all. You don't have to worry about those guys letting you down, not having a good game, getting tired, all that stuff. And then that allows you to just unleash guys like Jack Williams and Sifa Talakai and Rudolph. And Hamlin Yoeli only played 10 minutes. I'm not sure. Was that because did he get an injury or was that just by design? Either way, it doesn't matter. They're just capable now of unleashing these dudes for short stints. And that is such a big bonus in the modern NRL that you can keep your middle rotation fresh to the extent that Cronulla can. It's a large part of why they are where they are on the ladder. And it all starts with those two back rows and it snowballs from there. And when you get guys like Hazleton playing as well as they are and Kaufusi taking his game to another level, that's why they're on top of the ladder. And that's the platform they set in this game to go on and win it. The Dragons hung in there gamely. And we've now arrived at our bad Dally M vote of the week. Ben Hunt had one of the worst games I have ever seen, and he got a Dally M. I guess maybe the person didn't watch the game and thought, oh, well, the Dragons kept it close. That must have been because of Ben Hunt. Which, you know, if you didn't watch the game, you could be forgiven for thinking that because, you know, he is probably their best player. But he was shocked. He had a shocker. I have no idea how he got. This might be the year's worst Dally M vote. This might be so far since we've been doing, kind of keeping track of this since round one. This might be the worst one of the year. Oh, no, probably still the Dylan Brown one.
So I was going to say, this reminds me of the Dylan Brown one because they've probably looked at the stat and said, ooh, try assist in a close-ish loss. Must have played well. Well, no. He missed 5 tackles, had 3 errors, conceded a penalty. I don't think – you said Tom had 12 errors. He probably had 15 bad kicks. Like, he was putting in some stinkers. And in the wet –
kick, mate, 490 – kick meters, though. You got to look at kick meters, 496. Wow.
That tells the only story we need to know right there. He was not good, and he played like an angry man. Like, there was that play on the it wasn't even the last tackle, and they were just on the
right. Yeah, they all thought it was the last, and they threw like 6 desperation offloads in a row, one of which he threw, and then blew up it. Who threw that last pass?
Well, if you ask Warren Smith, it was Jaden Sewell.
I was going to say.
If you watched the game, it was Raymond Fatala
Mariner. I was so confused. I didn't want to say their own name because I'm like, I'm almost certain it was Raymond Fatala Mariner, but I know that Warren Smith said it was Jaden Sewell. So now I genuinely don't know who it was. So I'm glad you were here for that. But
yes.
Yeah, and then Hunt gave him a spray for it. I was like, mate, you just threw one of those. Like, you just did the same thing he did. Don't blame him.
Yeah, that was a bad, bad, bad Dally M. But that's, first, it's
right up there with Dylan Brown. We should keep a track of like the podium for the worst Dally M votes of the year. And I think him and Dylan Brown are 1 and 2. I'm sure we'll get another stinker before. What round are they going behind closed doors? Not till later, right? Like round 17 or something, right?
12, isn't it?
Is it that early? Jeez.
I think it's pretty early, yeah.
Why did I always think it was like the last 10 rounds or something? Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is those two are leading the charge right now for worst Dally M vote of the year. Oh, that'll be fun to dissect. And I mean, look, I was going to say, if we need a rugby league tragic to, after all the votes are made public, after the Dally M's are read out and the award is given, if we need a tragic to dissect every game and discern the worst vote of the year, I'm looking at him right now. That's a job for Martin, Journalism Gabor. I hope you're up to the task in grand final week.
Well, I don't think I'll have anything else on that night. So, yes, I'm happy to put my hand up if you do need someone to literally watch every single game.
We can watch every YouTube highlights package of every game and dissect all the votes.
Oh, okay. What are we doing? The 4 minute mini times 8:32. Yeah, no, that's fair.
32 a round.
Yeah, that's fine.
So 10 rounds is 320 minutes. So that's 5 and a bit hours. Oh, no, it's going to be more than 10 rounds, isn't it? Anyway, it's going to take a while, but we the listeners need it. Anyway, do you have much to say about the Dragons?
I'll just say the charge sheet I've literally just got in front of me now. Terrell Sloan, dangerous contact, tripping, third and subsequent offence, $3,000 with the early
speed. He's tripped three people?
Yes. 2 matches if he's guilty at the panel.
Wow. So and Wilton got a fine for careless high tackle. There you go.
The Dragons, look, they played the conditions pretty well, I thought, in that first half.
I agree, yeah.
A bit like the Tigers game, right? So they had that lead and then just fell away, and their discipline, yes. I know Sloan's one that gets fine, but their discipline really, really cost them again. Just the set restarts and the penalty, just at the worst time as well. I reckon they're a club that gives away a lot of like fourth and fifth tackle set restarts just with – markers not being square, just something that you can easily fix.
I wonder how much of it is like, because this game was such a big deal for Shane Flanagan, and he was so performative in the media for not just before this game, but before their previous game. Like, he's been talking about this game for 2 weeks now. And I just wonder if his sort of desperation and his emotions towards this situation might have spilled over into the playing group a little bit, because they were playing like that at times. It just felt like they were completely rudderless and very ill-disciplined at times, as you said. So maybe that's coming from the top. I don't know.
What's going on with Blake Laurie, by the way? Like last year, he carried this team. They had so many injuries in the middle. He was playing.
I forgot he was playing until he had like a yardage carry in the second half, like third or fourth tackle. Like I saw a guy 15 on his back cutting it up. And I was like, that kind of looks like Blake Laurie. And then they're like, yeah, Blake Laurie playing the ball. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
He started. Like he even started. Like, mate, there were games last year where he's playing the first 40 unchanged. In the preseason, I think we all wrote he's in the mix for Origin, and that's why I don't write Origin stories in February. He's had a real tough start, and talk about tough starts. You know you're in trouble when big milestone game. Get the jersey right, get the spelling right.
Dargons.
Dargons. And apparently, so if you missed it, Jack Bird played his 150th, and on the top middle of his jersey it says Dargons versus Sharks. Apparently 2 weeks ago, whenever Farmanu Brown came back.
They said
it was June instead of, oh, come on.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hard to spell Dragons correctly on a shirt, should it? Should it?
Seven letters. Apparently the GWS Giants, that is the Greater Western Sydney Giants, I've been led to believe, apparently they couldn't spell Melbourne in their banner against the Swans on Saturday. So
I don't care to know how to spell Melbourne. So that one I'm okay with. But yeah, just classic stuff. All right, Thursday night, we've got a weird Thursday night game. The Dolphins and the Sea Eagles.
What? The heated rivalry, mate.
Can you get... All right, you got to go to the ANZ press conference now, because I need an explanation as to how this is a Thursday night game. But in any case, this is a weird one for me to not be at SeaWorld. Like, I can't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is at Suncorp. So, be interesting to see the crowd. Manly up there, of course. They'll stay up there, I assume, before Magic Round the following week.
Yes, they will. They will. Yeah. They're not coming back.
So what are you thinking, mate? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, well, firstly, we're not going to get a good crowd, unfortunately. I think everyone's going to save their money for the magical round. And I think we saw last week, they said 8,000. Isaiah Yeo even had a crack in his press conference that it was more like 4,000.
I said it on Friday, but I'm glad he said that. Fuck, I hate playing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible. This is, look, it's fourth against fifth. Jeez, that doesn't sound right, does it? But it is. Big game. This needs to be a get right game, I think.
Yeah.
For Manly. Let me just check the weather conditions, because I get the feeling if it's, yeah, 0 to 2 mils, they're fine. So they're still going to be with that old.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to be with that Ola Kuatu still, which ain't great, because I don't know if you noticed, mate, Jake Trbojevic played on the edge at times last week, which that just can't happen ever again. I think, look, the record says they're 5-1-3, but like after a loss like that, it feels a lot worse, doesn't it, for Manly? Like it just feels like they've got maybe almost a losing record. So it shouldn't be doom and gloom, but I feel like if they lose this one and then they have Brizzy up at Magic Round, which they just never win, suddenly you're back to 5-5. Mate, and
this is the most one-sided rivalry in rugby league. Though Manly have won 100% of their games against the Dolphins, and the margin of victory is an average of 40 points.
Wow,
they've played once.
Wow. But hey, you're only as good as your last.
That was that game. That was that game. If you remember, in June last year, the real start of like. The Dolphins running out of players. Valance Tavare started at lock and they got their pants pulled down at Brookvale.
I don't think they're going to have their pants pulled down here at all.
Neither do I. I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll have to see teams and everything, because I don't know if the Dolphins will get any of those guys back. I think they said Flegg was still going to be out for a while. So
yeah. Olakwatu's big. If this was at SeaWorld, I'd tip the Dolphins, but I'm going to go Manly.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Manly just because I think this is a really important one for them, but geez, just don't lead 10-0 against the Dolphins. That's what I'll say. Maybe let them score first and see what happens.
Let them score first.
Yeah.
You've got Lutelli Lesniak interested in coming in to make the tackle. It's come off Lesniak. Wrong foot, Mary. Timmy Lesniak comes in to make the tackle.
Okay, some news before we get out of here. Aiden says a 4-game ban for that hip drop. That's not good.
No, it's not. 5 weeks if they challenge. I can't see a world in which they challenge.
How is he not sin binned, by the way? That's the thing, like, Tigers fans were bitching about the ref. It's like, she didn't sin bin Aiden Caesar for, like, one of the worst hip drops of the year. Like, can't complain too much.
It's a grade 3. Like, you can't think of too many grade 3 offences that haven't been at least sin binned. I mean... Really, that is one of the worst I've seen this season. I think they'll accept that. So, I guess Latu Fainu and Galvin, I haven't really liked.
Could be Bud Sullivan again. Yeah, I haven't either, but what are they going to do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel for Fainu coming off the bench and just been chucking him on for 10 minutes a dummy half. I'm not sure that's really helping him. It's certainly not helping the team. Like, you can see his passing isn't good enough, really, at this stage off the ground. Caesar's got to be better than that. Like, isn't that the concern? Like, it was a lot of their veterans who stuffed up, like Clemmer gets sin-binned, Caesar with a hip drop. Your leaders with a young team need to be a lot better than that.
Yeah, Isaac Tungo's only going to miss a week for that hip drop, and Jacob Host is missing two for the running into Brad Schneider thing. I don't think I'm being biased when I say that's a bit fucked up.
Right. I mean, that was a bad tackle by Tungo.
What I'm saying. Like, I'm so, like, obviously I know I'm a South fan, but that seems like one of those things was far worse than the other one, and they've got this backwards. But whatever.
Well, yeah, like, and also I think the Host contact wasn't as severe as, let's say, the one Aloye did. And Aloye got 1 week.
So, yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, who knows, mate? Let's stay on South because we're talking about them. Let's do the good first. Lewis Dodd. So it's done deal. I don't watch Super League. Some people that do told me that Jack Welsby is better, but I'm happy this guy. He fits my rigorous criteria of not being Lachlan Ilias or Dean Hawkins. So, you know, we'll see what he's got. What do you know about him? Tell me about him.
Well, he slayed the Panthers in a World Club Challenge match. That always counts for a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah. You're right. He's better than what they've got at the moment. is it exactly what they needed? I haven't seen enough of the tape to make a definitive call on whether he's going to be great in the NRL.
If you think I'm going to watch St. Helens games this year to get a better feel for this, you got another thing coming.
Man, apparently it's a six-way tie for first, by the way, in the Super League, and great. I assume St. Helens are one of them.
Well, the London Broncos certainly aren't.
But this is always a concern. Like, the forwards are never an issue, but how many English halves have actually killed it in the NRL? Like, George Williams
Gareth
played.
Widdup.
Gareth Widdup, yeah. So there are a couple.
That's literally it, those two.
It's slim pickings, right? It's not... I don't know if there's a reason behind that.
You know, for every Gareth Widdup, there's a Chris Thorman. It's like, well, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it is some good news. South desperately needed some good news because, mate, you'll touch on it. It's just confirmation. It just gets worse and worse and worse because the most handsome London boy in the world.
Yeah, I woke up on Saturday morning to two bits of news. One was that my captain, my handsome boy, Cam Murray, is out for 6 to 8 weeks with a hip flexor injury. And the other one that we find Gehemat Shibasaki on Match Famous from the Cowboys. Real mixed bag, Marty. You know, the highs of the Gehemat Shibasaki news and the lows of the Cam Murray news. I just ended up somewhere in the middle. Those things are proportionate, aren't they? Fuck! Yeah,
it's like getting the mixed bag of lollies and getting stuck with the licorice. Yeah. And you know those, that green one that doesn't know if it's sour or it doesn't, but it's certainly not
pick
sweet.
A lane green thing.
Yeah. Be something. And this is exactly what that is. Mate,
also, when the Lewis Dodd email came out, I thought we'd sign Kyle Flanagan. Have you seen the picture?
No, I haven't.
I'll send it to you. Like it's like, because obviously the St. Helens jersey looks like a Dragons jersey, and it had like him with the red V, like celebrating doing this one. It genuinely looks like Kyle Flanagan. While I talk about Cam Murray for a sec, I've sent you the picture, so you can react to it. But I genuinely thought we'd sign Kyle Flanagan. But yeah, the Cam Murray news is absolutely devastating. I just that laughter was about Dodd, not him.
Sorry,
laughing
it's about
Cam Murray, listeners.
Yes, no.
Just a devastating. Like, what are we get? Like, we're out of players. We literally don't have anyone left. I'm thinking about just taking my boots down. I can't play, but like, give me a chance. I'll try. I'll put
so
in.
Was it 17 fit players, and they've had to call up three, and most people probably wouldn't have heard of at least two of them. So
correct.
The Murray stuff. If there's one guy you couldn't afford to lose, it's Murray, and. Mm-hmm. I'm really worried what the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, try Gray's out for a few weeks now as well after the hip drop tackle. So, like, I think the plan genuinely would have been, I think they were generally going to try Luttrell in the halves with Jai Gray playing as well as he was. But that's off the table now because he's gone. So it'll be, well, you know, it's Monday now. We don't have the team sheet yet, but there's going to be some people that even I, as a South tragic, and even you and Camp, I was like diehard rugby league nerds, are not going to have heard of. We're gonna be getting into some real weird territory on that extended bench for the South team on Tuesday, but like, mate, it's just frustrating to me because yes, the season has been disastrous. The Souths are the toughest draw in the comp. They've played 8 games and 7 of them are against top 8 teams right now. They've had by a mile the hardest draw. They've had by a mile the worst injury toll. And you thought that maybe getting Luttrell back from his suspension this week, moving him into the halves, Jai Gray's playing well. You've got a player there. Guys like Campbell Graham and Alex Johnston sort of around the corner from returning, and you thought, look, I don't think the season's getting back on track in any great way, but I did think that you get a few of those guys back, the draw gets a little bit easier, maybe you win a couple of games and just sort of tiptoe your way to 12th place or whatever and just get the fuck out of this season. But now with Murray gone, Gray gone, Host suspended for 2 to 3 weeks, it doesn't matter who they play really. They don't have enough players to compete at the moment. They don't have 17 fit NRL players right now, and you can't really beat anyone when that's the case. Like, I just don't know. I think some questions have got to be asked about what the hell this club is doing, because this is the second year. If you remember last year, they had a diabolical injury toll as well. You remember the before they played that Broncos game in like round 20, whatever it was. Remember the ins for that list that week on the team sheet? It was like as long as the webpage itself. Like, and I know a couple of those guys were Origin players, but like 5 or 6 of them were injury related. And you look at the stars of this team, and like now with Cam injured, like you look at all the big names in this team over the past 2 years. Luttrell missed a big chunk of games with injury. Jairo missed a big chunk of games with injury. Alex Johnston, Campbell Graham, Luttrell Mitchell, all these guys missed big chunks of games. Junior Totola, big chunk of games with injury. Pretty much every star player, with the exception of Cody Walker, has missed big chunks of rugby league with injuries. And at some point, you've got to start asking why this is happening. Because You know, like I lived through this with the Ravens in the NFL, mate. Like they had the worst conditioning staff in the league. They got an F minus on like the honors player server, where every other team got like an A, a B, or a C. And they had the worst injury toll for like 3 or 4 years running. And they booted that guy. They showed him the door this year. And they had a much better injury toll. And they made the AFC Championship game with relatively a full strength team, basically. And so I don't know what the issue is. I don't know if it's their training methods or their conditioning, or whatever. But it's just like how can we have so many injuries again after going through 2023? I just don't get it. It's crazy.
Well, it's tough. Like even if they were all hamstrings, or if they're all shoulders, or if they're all the same thing. Probably you'd be able to find some sort of link there, but yeah, it just seems like it's just mixed bag again. But I don't know. I haven't studied it forensically enough, mate. It's probably one that at the end of the season they're going to have to, because this is borderline unprecedented. Like we know, teams at round 20, round 21, round 22 start panicking about, geez, NRL, we cannot name a team. What are we going to do here? Mm. You don't see it this early in the season. And I know Blake Solly, I think, mentioned on Saturday, we do need to really look at the loan system. And probably this is an on-the-spot question for you, but if South were able to loan or to get two players, like who would you be looking at from players who aren't getting a crack now in the NRL? Like, would it be a half? Would it be a middle? Because I think middle is probably where you really need.
I'd be taking a middle and probably an outside back. So I'd be looking at, I'd be picking up the phone to the Titans and asking for one of those wingers.
Yes.
Like Ella Khan Pereira or Jojo Fafita or someone like that. Just like whichever guy they're not playing in first grade, I'd love to get one of those guys. They'd probably want to release one of those dudes for depth reasons, but that's who I'd be on the phone to. And then I'd be picking up the phone to Canberra and saying, hey, I know Trey Mooney's a part of your long-term plans, but give him to us for the next couple of months. We'll give him a crack in first grade and then he can come back to you for next year, because he's clearly not going to play for you at the moment very much because you've got so many good forwards. So I think I'd probably go with like one of those outside backs of the Titans and then probably Trey Mooney from the Raiders.
Yeah. Wiramu Greg, Justin Matamua, these guys who...
Greg's a great one too. Yeah.
Just stuck in reserve grade and probably deserve to be playing, or certainly good enough to be playing NRL. And like there's salary cap dispensation for the club that gives you those players. It's something I think the NRL does need to look at this, because it's worked in other sports and it can certainly happen in this code as well.
Plus, it gave us those really funny pictures of Corey Wasber in a Bulldogs jersey.
Absolutely.
All right. We are going to get out of here. But before we do, a quick shout out to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon student service. Go to patreon.com/number because you get an extra show every week, access to our Discord server, merch discounts, and you will be at our Magic Round meetup should you be at Magic Round. Are you going to be at Magic Round?
No, I'm not. I thought I might go up for I thought I might call up for the Women's Origin, which probably snuck up on a lot of people. Game one is next week.
Yeah, like, if I'd known that in advance, I would have planned my trip to be there a day earlier than I'm going, but unfortunately not flying up till Friday morning. Flights were booked months ago, so
yeah. Annoying. Queensland named their squad last Friday. Haven't seen anything from the Blues yet, but I imagine we'll get something in the coming days.
Yeah, we'll have a proper preview for that on Monday next week, or maybe... I don't know. Maybe we'll have to. I'm just trying to think. We probably won't. I mean, I'll be flying up. We won't be able to do a Friday morning preview show. So maybe that'll have to be like a Thursday. I'll talk to whoever. I'll work it out. Logistics. That's for another time. But for now, thank you to a perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Savnell. Dave, if Souths are going good, rugby league is going good. In the immortal words of Buzz Rothfield, rugby league is a shit game. Stew, stupid sexy Hines, your Dally M God, a nightmare on Caxton Street, Adam Small, Alien versus Predator, Block Party seminal 2004 album Silent Alarm, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Piding Pom, Buttsy, Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, Jason, Joe Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kick South out of New South Wales Cup, Kick South out of the comp, Kick South out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Langdon Olga, Luke Charles Smidmore, Mads, Taylor's Version, Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins, my Dally M Boats, 3, War and Peace, 2, Great Expectations, 1, Wuthering Heights, my Ding Ding Dong is hard and I'm sad, Never Trendy, Puppy versus Farlongo, I'm a polygamist now, Asami Army, Ormac 78, Shit Up Your Ass, Manly, Push It Up, Manly, Reese Brown, Rowan Edwards, Roxanne Clark, See You in Vegas, Shunta Tai, TV, The Black Vegetable, The Brisbane Sniper, The Combat Vehicle, Thor, was Zenny Zlizniak, Westlife Podcast, Souths were cowards in 1909, some say they still are, and you got a question, you ask the 8-ball. I'm going to have to message Luke and find out, but I reckon that that he's written. Do you reckon I was supposed to say that like Tim the Toolman Taylor?
I think so, but the Dallin one made me crack up because I'm sure it's about Blocker. And he got it wrong again several times yesterday.
If a listener, if you could point me to the minutes he did it again, I'll add them to the news drop for next week. But for now, Marty, where can people find your work?
Unlike that other news wire, which you don't mention, you can just find it anything news court related. So your local paper, the telly, Courier Mail, Herald Sun, online, Fox Sports, news.com.au, all that. Mm. Other subscribers.
One last thing. So you were the most high profile non-competitor in Slow Your Brain in 2023. Many thought you would have been a short price favorite have you played. Some say the best to never play the game. Will you now on air commit to being a contestant 2024?
Just like Cody Rhodes, you can put my name in the Royal Rumble. I'm officially in. And not just that, I'm calling out Scott Bailey.
Bang.
Battle of the Newswires.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go. All right. Say goodbye, Marty.
Goodbye, Marty.
All right. It's goodbye from me.